You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
Last week, amid negotiations between the Public Service Commission and the NZEI Te Reo Roa Union over pay for primary school teachers, the government moved to offer pay rises to primary school teachers on individual agreements. The move has been criticised by the union as undermining negotiations, but the government has defended the move as simply offering those teachers what the union has already turned down. Last week also saw the release of Phase 2 of the Royal Commission inquiry into the COVID-19 response. The results were, by and large, positive towards the response, but with key points of debate still remaining. This week, I spoke to National MP Ryan Hamilton about all these topics, beginning by discussing the pay offer for primary school teachers. Last week, the government offered pay raises to non-unionised primary school teachers. What is the government's rationale behind this move?
It's quite interesting to see. The Public Service Commission obviously is enabling school boards to offer new payments to teachers who aren't union members. Obviously, those under union negotiations have been, well, those that they're working through the process and they've been ongoing for a while. But I guess it makes clear that those non-union members are also entitled to those allocations and are probably a little bit more free to accept them at a faster rate.
And how does the government defend from claims that this is undermining the collective bargaining of the unions through offering payment to non-unionised members?
Well, I mean, Sir Brian has said that he'll continue to negotiate in good faith with the unionised members, and everyone is hopeful that the bargaining process will result in a new collective agreement to be ratified by teachers who are under that primary teachers collective agreement. But I mean, non-unionised teachers also have a right to contract, and it's fair and reasonable that nearly a third of them who are not part of that union should be offered a contract so they can receive the pay increases that the government has already offered. Currently, you know, they've been limited by the ongoing negotiations or impacted by them.
Public Service Commissioner Brian Roach has even said, though, that the move is unusual. When we're looking at kind of this idea that negotiations will continue in good faith, how does unusually taking avenues to weaken the position of the union, how is that still negotiating in good faith?
It's enabling school boards to offer those agreements, and they've been accepted. And I guess they haven't got they're not heckling or negotiating or resisting or leveraging, you know, they're in a position where they thought that was a good offer and they're in a position to take it. I think it is different, but it's also, you know, why should just unions hold, you know, government departments to ransom by, you know, taking a long time to negotiate? I mean, none of the negotiation has to take ages and ages. It's about good faith. It's about making decisions and agreeing and moving on. And I guess that's the counter argument for unions.
Education has obviously been kind of a hotspot throughout the term of this government, with a lot of changes coming through towards the curriculums or the ways that we're teaching to kind of fix perceived problems. The government speaks a lot about, you know, the best interest of the education sector and teachers. How can the government claim that things are in best interest of teachers when a large proportion of teachers are in fact in this union, which they are not giving the pay rise that they are asking for?
Look, that's a negotiation between them and the commissioner. We feel that the education reforms that we've put through in a lot of ways actually support teachers, because they don't have to try and reinvent the wheel. They don't have to create curriculum and syllabus. It's all there. It's all prescribed, not only the resource for the teachers, but the resource to support the teachers. And that's actually trying to make their life a little bit more straightforward, a bit more standardised across primary and intermediate schools. So that's also got to be of benefit to the teachers.
The union has specifically kind of pointed to these curriculum changes as a negative in their bargaining for a pay raise. They're specifically saying that the changes brought in by the government are making their jobs harder, and so they need this pay rise. How can that then be good for the teachers if such a large proportion of teachers is saying actually no?
Well, you know, I disagree with that comment by the unions. I mean, of course the unions would say that because they're always looking to leverage and, you know, a better deal. But, you know, our government's being supportive of giving them, you know, a clear resource and the resources to do it, and supported teacher training and upgrades and actually providing clarity. So, yeah, I'd disagree with that, you know, statement or assumption.
Moving on. Last week saw the release of the second phase of the COVID-19 inquiry. This phase was commissioned by this coalition government. Can you tell us why the government believed the second phase was needed?
I think it was clear as part of the coalition agreement that there was going to be an inquiry. And I think when that first inquiry went through, there was some dissatisfaction that it was broad enough. And I think the, you know, that came through clear. So the second phase was able to, I guess, give effect to those concerns and make it broader. I mean, ideally, it would have been done in the first instance, but it wasn't. But I think that satisfies. There was a lot of concern that it wasn't broad enough and covering off some of the things like the mandates and the lockdowns of Auckland, which has come through quite clearly, obviously, in this one.
And looking to the results of this inquiry, what is the government wider, but also the National Party stance on what we are seeing coming out in these reports?
Well, I mean, the first thing is it's damning from a financial perspective. I mean, we'd already had the Treasury report come out last year about the overspend in the last sort of 6 years. But, you know, to see $60 billion but half of that not directly related to the COVID response, I think was alarming. You know, we saw all sorts of projects like Shovel Ready. The Shovel Ready projects, half of the spending wasn't actually allocated until 2 years after the announcement. So, you know, there wasn't really shovels anywhere near it. And, you know, that the Royal Commission talked about stimulatory responses should have been timely, targeted and temporary, and a lot of those things, you know, were far from that. That drove up a lot of inflation, and, you know, that's made a significant impact on Kiwis, you know, cost of living, which is flowing through, and then we've had to try and address that in the last 2 to 3 years. Fortunately, we've seen inflation come down, and it's meant the average mortgage has reduced by up to $10,000 a year. And prior to the Middle East conflicts, which, you know, sort of escalated in the last few weeks, our economy was expected to grow 3% through next year and through this year and next year, and we were likely to get into surplus faster. So it's taken a lot of work, but, you know, the financial implications of that wasteful spending through COVID, you know, Kiwis are still paying for now.
On the economic side, though, the report and the inquiry showed that the Treasury believed that the government should stay the course with lockdowns in August 2021 and that they expected the economy to bounce back. The Treasury has also said in this inquiry that there were no obvious signs of high-level economy indicators declining that decision-makers should have been aware of. The inquiry itself has said that none of the advice that the government was given indicated any sort of severe economic fallout. What then does the National Party have to say about the fact that the Treasury, by and large, did approve of the measures and steps taken by the Labor Party, by the Labor government?
Well, you know, the report also showed that Chris Hipkins kept Auckland locked down longer than required, despite receiving advice that the restrictions could have ended sooner. Now, whether that was implicitly linked to Treasury forecasts could be argued, but he was told that the Auckland boundary was unnecessary and unpractical and could have been lifted. Despite that, he kept it in place for another 32 days after Christmas and New Year. And obviously that left businesses shut, families separated. You know, it impacted a lot of people with, you know, the ability to go to simple functions like weddings and funerals. And we think he owes an explanation to every Aucklander that went through that squeeze as to why he personally held on to those, shutdowns for longer than he needed.
Looking towards the rest of the inquiry, though, a lot of the results are either positive or amiable towards the former Labor government's handling. The National Party at the time was very critical of especially the extended lockdowns, which you've talked about, but also the vaccine mandate. What is the National Party's stance on the way that vaccines were rolled out and mandated during the COVID lockdowns?
Well, the Royal Commission said that the mandates could have been released sooner. But I guess the most alarming part was the 12 to 17-year-old, you know, double shot aspect, where obviously that was a failing of both the ministry, and we'd argue politically as well, in terms of the communication that hadn't been portrayed. But we saw that, you know, Aisha Viral, as minister responsible at the time, had made a note in the margins expressing, you know, some concern or doubt, but there'd been no follow-up. And so, you know, arguably 12 to 17-year-olds didn't need that second shot. And that, you know, that does leave a risk and a lot of frustration for parents that trusted the process. And so that's why we've put an inquiry in to find out, or, you know, to make sure that doesn't happen again, because that's, you know, so the health minister's written to the director general on that, directing a review, because obviously vaccines are an important part of, you know, child health and protection. But when you have something like that, a breach, it can make, you know, those parents a little bit weary of trusting government and officials, which is quite an alarming thing.
And I mean, on that, looking towards especially those concerns over the double shot, the New Zealand for us has called for a third stage of the inquiry into vaccine health impacts. What is the net? Obviously, you've just said that, you know, looking into a review around some of these, but what is the National Party stance on a more official third inquiry into vaccine health?
I don't think we're taking a broad, I don't believe there's a broad inquiry into vaccine health. We're obviously trying to target vaccination rates, particularly in our children, and we've seen some incremental improvements in those targets. So yeah, the issue wasn't the vaccine itself, but the second dose, which raised the risk of myocarditis in an age group that had already had a very low risk. But yeah, it's just the flow-on effect from those things we've got to manage and make sure that it doesn't impact our ability to continue to keep New Zealand's healthcare and immunisations rates strong.
That was National Party MP Ryan Hamilton talking about the government's pay rise for non-union primary school teachers and phase two of the Royal Commission inquiry into COVID-19.
That was our weekly chat with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.